Okay, this is the introduction to modernism, which is the area we'll be covering basically for the rest of the semester. On the webpage, you'll see that there are, as with the Enlightenment and the Romantic period, there are certain characteristics that we're going to look for in all the works we're addressing in terms of modernism. The first and kind of overwhelming thing is that there's this, the idea isn't to present objective reality anymore. The idea is to present how this process works, how seeing works, right? How things are perceived rather than what is perceived, right? An example, that first example I give there is that stream of consciousness writing, and that blue text on the page is the last few lines of James Joyce's Ulysses. Now that's considered to be probably the most important novel, right? Certainly the most important modernist novel in the 20th century. And there are some distinctions that we're going to see and some things that we're certainly not going to expect, some things that make it more difficult for us as readers to understand these texts. If you just read through those lines, it really takes a lot of unpacking because there's no punctuation. It's just kind of all run together and it's repetition. It's this interior monologue. We call it stream of consciousness writing, right? So this interior monologue that is difficult to sort out unless you really sit down and thoroughly kind of run it up against everything else that's going on in that text as well. And it's a pretty long text, so it's kind of difficult to do, especially at the end. But in modernist text, this next big point is this idea of the unreliable narrator. That narrators aren't always going to tell you the truth, even if they know it. Sometimes they just don't know it. Or you're going to have multiple narrators giving you varying perspectives on the same event. So you end up with something like Rashomon or William Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury, where you really don't understand what's going on there until you get maybe three quarters of the way through the text. You're kind of blinded by, because the narrators are just, you can't understand what they're saying. They're telling you two different perspectives on the same thing. It's like even when, you know, you tell stories to your friends, you get two people telling the same story, it's going to vary, right? And for modernists, like, well, we're not really concerned with what really happened, with the objective truth. What we're concerned with is how this process is being told. Right? And there certainly is lots of moral ambiguity and things like that. And the idea of a third person omniscient narrator is just completely gone. Also, in terms of their texts, we're going to, yeah, and I know I've said this about Romanticism and probably about the Enlightenment as well, this idea that people weren't used to we've got these all kinds of different forms here, right? So the genres get mixed. Right? You get poetry that looks like prose. You get prose that looks like poetry. You get drama that's commentary on the drama, the idea of meta work, right? Metafiction is a kind of a modernist thing, right? Fiction about fiction or about itself, this kind of reflexive fiction happens there. And so when we look at things like Prufrock, or I think we're looking at Akhmatova's Requiem, or magical realism, these are all, right, ways of expanding our kind of our ways of telling stories, and therefore calls us as readers to expand our ways of understanding stories. Along with this, in terms of kind of the formal structure of thing, is this idea that narrators aren't going to fill in all the gaps for you, right? This notion of a discontinuous narrative or a fractured form, right? The use of ellipses or something like that. There's a famous Hemingway short story that basically what happens in the story is it's a man and a woman waiting for a train. In somewhere in Spain, they're waiting at this train station, and they talk with one another. The entire story is about whether this woman is going to get an abortion or not, but that is never mentioned in the text, not even close. It's up to you to figure it out, right? There are gaps in the text, and you need to figure out what connects, right, the two text pieces, what fills those gaps. You're going to get lots of practice when we look at ProofRock in terms of that, because there are plenty of ways in ProofRock, right, there are plenty of gaps in that text, and it's kind of, instead of being this linear narrative where point A leads to point B to point C, what you get is this entire, right, this fragment, this kind of buckshot, these little pieces that you have to piece together, like pointillism, that you have to connect the dots there, really. There's also a focus in modernism that they always want to make you aware that you're not looking at the real world. You're looking at a product, a piece of artifice. Remember in Yeats, where that stanza in Easter 1916, where he sets up that place where everything changes except for that stone? Do you remember that? If you do, it's a good analogy for this idea of art as art. Right? When you make something art, it stops moving, right? You've fixed it. You've set it in place. It doesn't move. It doesn't grow. It doesn't change. The rest of the world does. And so this idea of art as art, the pieces are always going to call attention to the fact that you're not looking at the real world. You're looking at somebody's interpretation of it, somebody who wrote it down and fixed it, and maybe didn't fix it the way you see the world, but the way they see the world. This idea of minimizing aesthetics is pretty interesting as well, right? This idea of, you know, there aren't these big elaborate things like with the Romantics. They had this long list of things that Romantic poetry had to do. Believe me, I spared you all that when we were doing the Romantics. These guys are into minimalism. They like these really small things. If you take a look at that poem, The Red Wheelbarrow, that's on the page, here's the entire poem. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rain water beside the white chickens. And the question is, what depends on the red wheelbarrow, right? That's the question of the poem. So much depends upon. Now, you can conjure up an image of in your head of a farm, and of this, literally the image, this red wheelbarrow that's wet and it's just rained and there are white chickens there. But the question is, what depends upon it? And the answer is, the only thing we can say for sure that depends upon it is the poem itself. Take away the red wheelbarrow from the poem, The Red Wheelbarrow, and what do you have? You have nothing. You don't have a poem. So that so much is the poem referring to itself. And it seems almost like a dirty trick. But we'll see lots of examples of that when we look at other poetry as well. This idea that the artists know, the writers know that they're producing a work of art, and they're not trying to convince you that they're not doing that. They're trying to tell you, look at this work of art. This isn't the real world. The real world's going on around you, but for the time you are reading this, you're immersed in this work of art. Finally, what they use for their sources, right, modernist writers, is they don't care. High sources, low sources, pop culture, it's like quoting Rick and Morty and then quoting some opera in two separate lines of a poem, right? There's no distinction between high culture and low culture. They don't care. We'll see a fine example of that at the very beginning of ProofRock. Right? That passage in Italian that comes from Dante's Inferno. And then we'll see him referring to drinking songs or tea parties or something like that in the same poems. Lots of biblical references, lots of classical references, but then very mundane references to like what people are wearing and whether they should comb their hair over because they're going bald and stuff like that. It all jostles together. It all makes sense as a whole, but it's not all of the same tone, basically. It's all just used differently. And the rest of that page is there's lots of other ways to think about this. And so I've included some things from Brock University, right, about interiority of the time, what's going on in the culture at that time, and then finally, like some standard definitions of modernism in literary circles, right, from some kind of standard text there from M.H. Abrams. And then that final thing is these constellations of meaning, right? What happens with that from Paul Rubin? I transferred some of that. But that's about it. And actually, modernism is that kind of thing where you'll know it because you'll see so many examples of it. And you'll see, right, Prufrock, the one we lead off with, is one of the most perfect examples of this. And that's what we'll be starting with in the next module.